I'm Brandon Bartnick, and this is the Future of Mobility Podcast.
The Future of Mobility Podcast is focused on the pursuit of safe, sustainable, effective, and accessible transportation of goods and people. Given the critical nature of the world's climate and energy needs, these topics have never been more important, and they're certainly important to me. So, this podcast is a weekly interview series in which I learn from and put the spotlight on the people helping to develop and implement the technology required to move us forward. Who am I? As mentioned, my name is Brandon Bartnick, and I'm an engineer who realized that making a positive impact is the most important thing to me, both through this podcast and my career in the industry. If you're passionate about any of the topics I cover here, please feel free to reach out on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to connect. Also, if you hear anything you like, please consider sharing the Future Mobility with a friend or colleague. This podcast is brought to you by Edison Manufacturing and Engineering. Technology innovation is great, but it doesn't mean anything if we can't bring our impactful products to life, which means we have to build them. And unfortunately, that's easier said than done, especially for startups and evolving companies that need a reliable option for low-volume builds. That's where we come in. Edison is your turnkey manufacturing partner, specializing in build and assembly of highly complex products in annual volumes of 10 to tens of thousands, utilizing an agile and capital-light approach. If you need a trusted manufacturing partner, then please visit us at edison-mfg.com or feel free to reach out to me directly at brandon.bartnick@edison-mfg.com or by visiting my LinkedIn page, Brandon Bartnick. Now to this week's episode. Today's guest is Vinay Sheth. Vinay is co-founder and CEO of Teleo, who is revolutionizing the construction industry by retrofitting traditional heavy equipment with autonomous and remote-operated technology to create supervised autonomous machines. So, talking autonomy, teleoperations, we're talking about solving real-world problems with these technologies. And this has been a common theme over the last few months of where can autonomy be applied today and meet a business need and do something where we're addressing a labor shortage and all of these great things. So I'll leave the intro short. Please enjoy this conversation with Vinay Sheth. Today I'm joined by Vinay Sheth. Vinay, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah, looking forward to this discussion, what you guys are doing at Teleo. I'll say my toddler would be very jealous right now because all he wants to talk about is heavy machinery and construction and mining equipment and dozers and excavators and haul trucks. And so I think I'm living my toddler's dream right now.
I got to tell you, it's a lot of fun, Brandon. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. But do you mind kind of starting things off, setting the stage, introducing yourself and what you're doing with Teleo?
Yeah, my name is Vinay Sheth. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Teleo. Teleo is a company that retrofits heavy construction equipment like wheel loaders, dozers, trucks, etc., to turn them into what we call supervised autonomous machines or even remote controlled machines. What that means is the operators of those machines are no longer have to sit inside the cab, but rather they sit at a comfortable control station, could be hundreds of miles away, and control not one, but multiple machines at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we'll unpack, I'm sure, many aspects of yes. That. Would you mind sharing a bit about kind of the path? So how'd you get in this space, and how'd you choose to focus in on this application?
Yeah, so both my co-founder, Ron Clement, and myself spent many years before this company working at Lyft's Level 5 group. As you know, Lyft's Level 5 group was the group charged with building out the self-driving car for Lyft around 2016 to just a few years ago. And in that setting, both of us, we had a front row seat in going from effectively nothing to building out a fairly well-fleshed out organization with multiple autonomous cars riding public streets here in California. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of the sort of the pain points that we saw in kind of that journey that inspired us to go down the path to start Teleo. The key, I would say, pain point in building that out was that while the technology had advanced significantly in across perception, across path planning, across across building stable and hardware as well, the application itself of driving a car without anyone behind the driver's in the driver's seat at the time seemed far away. There were a lot of hurdles that had to be cleared out before we got to that point. Mm-hmm. But if you took the same or similar technology and applied it to other domains like construction, mining, and even other verticals like farming or yard logistics and so on and so forth, you could bring it to market a lot sooner.
Yeah, and I certainly agree, and that's a premise and kind of a general theme here on the on the podcast, right? Where wider scale autonomy on mixed use roads and robo taxis and private use autonomy and stuff, like, it's great that there are people working on that. I think that's right. Kind of that's the holy grail, or at least aspects of the holy grail, and like that's going to have a huge impact on society when that comes. But it's a very hard problem to solve with a lot of capital and time that's required. And it seems like in here and now, there are specific use cases that can be solved very well, either with an autonomous or, as you mentioned, kind of teleoperated autonomy type system. But so within, though, even if you take that at face value, so you mentioned there's heavy equipment, construction, mining, there's yard logistics, there's agriculture. You also could expand beyond that. I mean, there's campus-based solutions, right?
Yeah.
For, I don't know, various types of movers within warehouses, or including material logistics and warehouses and moving around campus shuttles and things like that. Like, there's a lot of use cases that also do this work of trimming down the ODD and making it more manageable. How do you arrive at heavy equipment and heavy construction equipment, mining equipment?
Yeah, I think across a lot of these traditional industries, one thing has been true for some time now, and it's only going to get worse over the next few years, is the acute skilled labor shortage, right? There simply aren't enough people available to do the work that needs to be done. And if you zoom in into these areas and look at construction specifically, construction is the bedrock of modern society. Everything around us, the roads, the buildings, our hospitals, schools, everything is something that the construction industry puts together. And that is an industry that has particularly faced the brunt of the skilled labor shortage. And so for us, it was an underserved market, one where the problem was extremely severe, but at the same time, there wasn't enough infusion of technology over the years. In fact, if you look at numbers specifically in the construction industry, over 93% of companies, contractors, say that they have open positions, and 91% of them say that they have a hard time filling those open positions. Right? And furthermore, over 40% of the folks working in those industries are expected to retire over the next decade or so, right? So the problem is bad today, and it's only going to get worse.
And how do you then do the downslope? So you have this high level problem of labor shortage, you have important work that needs to be done, scaling. You have on the supply side, you have this autonomy technology that continues to improve. How do you do the work of kind of coming together in the middle and trying to dissect, okay, what are the specific aspects of this labor shortage where we can provide value today and scale in the future?
Yeah, we began by talking to a lot of contractors and trying to understand what their pain points were. And across the board, everyone told us that the number one pain point was indeed labor. In fact, a lot of our customers, even today, tell us that they routinely park heavy equipment on the side because they're unable to find people to operate those machines. Right? Now, zooming in on the specific application, talking about heavy equipment and earth moving, this is an industry that employs extremely large machines which are hundreds of thousands of tons, and they move millions of cubic yards of dirt every year. And there's not enough people to run those machines and actually do the work that they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and then how did you, so what are the main use cases that you're solving for today? So I mean, you talked about wheel loaders and a few other things, but what have you narrowed in on kind of the specific on-site use cases and applications that you're trying to solve?
So as I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, we take a unique approach where we're actually blending teleoperations with autonomy. Mm-hmm. And so we believe strongly that the path to fully autonomous machines goes through human supervision. And what that means for us is that because we have a human in the loop, we can at once go after a broad array of use cases, right? And to give you some example, we had announced earlier this year a few of our customers. For example, with Tykert Inc., which is basically located here in California, they are utilizing us in a quarry use case where they use a large Caterpillar dozer to move dirt into their processing plant in a quarry setting. We have another customer called JR out in Ontario, Canada, where it's a concrete plant, a very different use case, and there's a wheel loader in the yard of the concrete plant, and the plant operator with the Telio system can basically load in their own plant and have smooth operations there. A third use case is, as again we had mentioned, our customer called Tomahawk in Florida, who actually is a residential earth moving contractor. And they build residential and commercial properties, and they move earth and flatten the ground out before the buildings get built out. And they use trucks to move, to haul millions of cubic yards of dirt every year. And they want to be able to use Telio to have their operators not travel to the construction sites, but actually sit in an office and run multiple machines from there.
And what's the business model? Are you getting paid like a subscription, or are you getting paid to provide a set service on the plant?
We do both. We sell them the kit on the machine, and then we have a subscription to run the system on their site.
Gotcha. And so what is this, the solution generation and application? So someone, in the query application comes to you, right? And is it that they're seeing, hey, we're looking for an automated dozer and you guys can give us one, let's take it. Or is it that they come to you and they say, hey, we have this application that we're struggling to solve. We have a labor shortage. Feels like there might be a solution here in the autonomy space. Let's work with Telio to put together a customized solution to solve this problem. What does it usually look like?
It varies. It's a mix with the different customers. But the underlying motivation behind all of our customers working with us is indeed the fact that labor is hard to get, right? And so with them, not only are they able to now take their existing staff and have them be more productive and do more, but there's also a interesting side effect where they make for a more comfortable environment for their operators. The operators are now not sitting in a harsh and difficult environment and getting beat around in the machine for 8 to 10 hours a day. They're sitting in a comfortable, air-conditioned office-like setting where they can run the machines from there. And what that means to us is that just by that step alone, by taking the person out of the machine and into a comfortable office-like setting, we think can expand the workforce by making it more accessible to a lot more people than before. Right?
Yeah, I think that certainly makes sense. And I guess going on this whole right of so teleoperation on the surface, it seems kind of simple, right? Of like, yeah, we're used to remote controls and playing video games growing up and seeing, but this is very challenging, especially my understanding is reliability and speed of the signals that are being generated and shared is critical in these applications. Like what are, from your perspective, what are the main challenges or the most important things you have to get right from a teleoperation perspective to have a safe and reliable deployment?
I think it's a multi-layered problem. And indeed, as a company, we are proud that we have offered a full stack solution, which means that we offer the retrofit hardware that goes on the machine, as well as the mesh network that is deployed on the site to enable communication, as well as the communication software and the control station and the machine learning and the autonomy stack that runs the machines autonomously. So it's the whole stack that we have developed ourselves in-house. And we've obviously paid a lot of attention to end-to-end latencies, to making sure the machines come to a safe stop if there were ever a situation that requires the machines to stop. In terms of path planning and being able to traverse a certain specific path and trigger autonomy when needed, right? So it's all of these layers sort of clicking together to deliver a full stack solution to the customer.
So in your mind, it's the system level optimization and integration that's the challenge here, not necessarily any specific link in the chain.
I believe so. I think it's very tempting to take a layer of the entire stack and outsource it to somebody else and have somebody else maybe build your hardware, or maybe somebody else do your networking, or maybe somebody else do your autonomy. But really, I think the thing that sets us apart is the fact that we have basically built these bespoke layers that tie into each other perfectly so that the whole solution works end to end.
Yeah, so how do you find the line then within, sensors and things, I imagine you're using off the shelf. So like, how do you find the line of where are there existing solutions that are good enough or maybe even are better than what you develop in-house, because there's companies that have been focused on these things, versus where are there things that, as you mentioned, you can't compromise on and that it makes more sense for you to fully own from the ground up?
Yeah, I think that line is pretty clear, right? So things like sensors, a lot of advancement has happened over the last several years. My co-founder, Ron Clement, can tell you war stories from when he was back at Google building Google Street View At the time, he had to build custom cameras because there was nothing off the shelf that he could use. But today, there's a lot more diversity of ruggedized automotive grade sensors that you can utilize, in your solution. But going a level deeper, we take pride in the fact that what we have built is indeed a universal solution where we can go after all of the machine types that our customers possess today, be they wheel loaders, trucks, excavators, dozers, but also from different OEMs, be it Caterpillar, John Deere, Komatsu, Volvo, and from a wide array of vintages as well. So what that means is that, we are indeed a single solution for, our customers who always have a diverse fleet in their possession.
Yeah, what does that actually look like in practice? So, I mean, back to, and pick a case study, right? It would be different if you had like an off the shelf and you said, hey, here's this automated wheel loader that we can sell to you, and like here's this off the shelf thing. I mean, maybe you already have that or not, it sucked, but it's a different solution of no, we will go and, because for the most part, these companies, they already have existing hardware, right? And this stuff's super expensive. It lasts for a long time. I would imagine they're not necessarily wanting to buy new right. equipment every time. So they probably prefer you to come in and retrofit something. Right. And so like, how much application work is there trying to figure out exactly, where does the hardware go in this specific application? What are the different control scheme for the vehicle, or how much application work goes into each deployment?
So we have gotten very good at this, right? So we have actually, again, sort of the last several years, really developed core IP or how we build that interface into the machine and how we deploy it. We are at this point right now in the process of scaling out our deployments, where we are encountering a wide array of machines from different OEMs, different vintages, and we are scaling up to deploy them very rapidly. From the perspective of the customer, really it's about trying to identify the right use case that delivers the maximum ROI for them. But we are able to retrofit and make the entire stack work on the system with very little customization on our side.
And are you able to own that IP? I mean, so you got a John Deere behind you, right? So like once you do one John Deere wheel loader, then yeah, the next time someone has a John Deere, if it's the same vintage, like do you own that application level IP or?
All of the technology we have built is stuff that we own clearly. Yeah. There's a very high diversity among the machines out there in the world. Even within a single OEM, there isn't always a unification under the hood of the vehicle architectures, right? And so we do indeed need to abstract, those architectures out to effectively interface with them.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. It's never as simple as it seems, kind of in an ideal world.
Yeah. Right.
And how... Maybe jump into a different adjacent topic here, but like, so the move from on-road with Lyft to these off-road heavier duty applications, yeah. There's a lot of similarity, of course, in that like the core brains of any robotic app, like there's a core processes of your sensing, perception, path planning, path following, but how did you go about understanding the nuances of this new world that you're entering and trying to figure out like where are the places where you might be ignorant and the things that you don't even know that you should be concerned about?
Yeah. I think there's there's generally speaking, sometimes an oversimplification where people say, on road driving is hard, but off-road somehow is simpler. The reality is not that straightforward. It is better constrained. Off-road is better constrained. And the reason I say that is because you don't have a lot of extraneous factors like bicyclists weaving in and out of your path, or children running across the streets, or weird stuff that you don't expect to be on the road, right? In a construction site or for that matter in similar verticals, it is constrained in the sense that it tends to be commercial, closed, and so that's the nice part about it. But then in construction, you're moving dirt. So if you want to go down a fully autonomous path, in some ways, it is harder than driving on a flat, well-defined, pavement, right? And so I think that's the trade-off between the two. And some companies are trying to go down the path of building it end-to-end, fully autonomous, where they're not only operating the machine by going from point A to point B, but also engaging dirt. Whereas the path that we have taken is that we try to blend the human teleoperations for doing the hard stuff, like engaging dirt, whereas we deploy autonomy for parts where the machine goes from point A to point B.
And how tough, So I have no clue here, but how tough is it, like, from a NVH perspective, right? So you're not moving at the same speeds that you are on road, but yeah. I mean, right, the ground's really they get huge equipment, uneven ground. I have to imagine there's a good amount of shaking. There's dirt flying all around all over the place. Yeah. So the robustness requirements, how difficult is that?
The robustness requirements are probably higher than, on road cars, right? But the vehicle itself, and that we deploy the skit on, is designed to survive that mm-hmm. environment, right? Trucks are designed to go off road in a not smooth road. Excavators are designed to go and engage dirt and endure a lot of g forces. Our kit has to obviously endure that as well, and we have spent time to make sure that it is indeed ruggedized to survive for thousands of hours on those machines. But the underlying machine itself, fundamentally, is designed to handle those variations.
Gotcha. And how about, are there any, from like a business and an operations perspective, what is it that you don't think that the general public understands about, you know, the customers that you're serving here, right? So the people who are deploying a fleet of heavy equipment, what are the things that actually matter to them? And what are the things that we might not recognize as like unique, you know, boundaries and conditions that they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is probably underappreciated of how fundamental a piece construction plays in our day-to-day lives. There are these large plants and large operations happening in plain sight, and we see construction crews on the road. But it's these men and women who operate in hazardous conditions for 8, 10, 12 hours a day to make the infrastructure that we have come to rely on. Right? I think that's one aspect that I think the general public tends to have forgotten. You know, we tend to be kind of not see that. But these folks, they work in such harsh environments, and it truly is a pleasure to watch them adopt new technology and realize and clicks that, oh, this is actually going to work for me. It actually makes my life a little bit better.
And I was struck by one of the comments you made earlier about the fact that a lot of this equipment is sitting idle right now because of lack of labor. My understanding, and one of the things I was going to ask you about here, was that, you know, uptime is a critical metric in this industry, and that, you know, some of the contracts and purchasing vehicles are even tied to the fact that there's a certain, you know, uptime threshold, and that even the OEM can be responsible, as I understand it, in some of these contracts to, from financial liability if they're not able to meet a certain level of uptime. So it sounds, which is all good. But then when you add in this aspect of, hey, you need people to actually be able to operate the vehicles for them to be in operation, even if the vehicle is working fine. Like, yeah, I can certainly see if this truly is, you know, they have vehicles, very important and very expensive equipment that needs to be running for them to be able to do their job at a construction site or a mining site or whatever. Sure. Yeah, I certainly can imagine how there's a financial incentive for them to put a solution in place quickly that allows them to get around that. So what am I missing of, what do you think's particularly exciting that, what are you most excited about that Telio is working on, or that you either right now that you have deployed or that you're working on going forward?
I mean, as I said earlier, you know, the watching a massive machine roll past you with no one in the cab, it never gets old. It's it's quite the amazing experience to watch. And, you know, we always see folks stopping by and taking pictures and, you know, kind of telling their kids that, hey, look, I saw this massive Tonka truck with no one was riding in it. So I think that's the piece that really, is really exciting to watch visually. But beyond that, like I said, I think the fact that we are able to make the operators' lives a little bit better, at the same time giving the customers a lever by which they become more productive and go after all the work that's coming up now, especially with the $1 trillion infrastructure bill that's come out, where a lot of new work needs to be done to upgrade our roads and bridges and other critical infrastructure. And so it feels like this is the right time to kind of, introduce technology like this to the market so we can, leverage all these folks here.
And what size or range of applications are you getting into? Like, I remember it was remarkable for me the first time I went to Mine Expo in 2021, mm-hmm. you know, seeing the Komatsu, I think it was a Komatsu excavator in the center, and talking to them being like, yeah, this is, I think it was like, yeah, we got two sizes that are bigger than this. They just don't fit within the the Las Vegas Convention Center, which is, yeah, just blew my mind. Or like just looking at the size of the tires on the haul trucks and stuff. Yeah. It's like, how big of vehicles have you gotten into so far?
We've gotten into very large machines. We've gotten to, you know, like a Caterpillar D10 T2. I want to say 145,000 pound machine that operates as a quarry class machine. Also large wheel loaders like the 944K, as well as things like Komatsu WA500. These are pretty large machines that are utilized on either large construction sites or on quarries and so on.
And what are the key enablers for you to continue to grow and scale and, you know, put more of this technology in the world?
I think as we scale our deployments and as customers start to see more and more of our machines, the interesting part here is that the product speaks for itself. When customers see other customers using our product, it immediately clicks and they're like, I want this. And I think at that point, it's really on us to be able to scale to meet that demand and be able to keep introducing new user delight features that, you know, keep our customers happy and our operators comfortable and happy so that they keep coming back for more.
Yeah, cool. It sounds like fun, exciting work, like I mentioned. I mean, definitely, I don't know, anyone who's mechanically inclined should marvel at kind of the work that's being done here. And it's a cool example of in some ways, I think, of the proliferation of automotive advancements, right? So you came from an automotive adjacent world, and we're seeing over time that the electrification work as well as the autonomy work that is being done or has been done over the last decade in that space is finding its way into other aspects and solving real world problems and providing value. And it's really cool to see.
Indeed.
So cool. Yeah. Vinay, anything particular you want to highlight for you're hoping that someone listening to this conversation takes away?
No, I think I would just say in parting that I strongly believe that robotics in general is what is going to be sort of generationally defining for the next 10 to 20 years. That we are at the early stages of what machines can do for humans by working alongside humans and letting us do more and letting us be comfortable that we do what we're doing. And I think this is just one of those steps in that direction. So I'm very bullish about how technology will continue to transform people's lives. And if anyone's watching this, you know, I hope that the next generation is inspired by that. And we have more such companies tackling these hard problems and making our lives better.
Cool. Well, yeah, I really appreciate it. Great discussion here, and best of luck to you and Telio.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks. Well, there you have it. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Vinay Sheth. So what stands out? So one is kind of the comparing contrast, right? The on-road and the off-road autonomy. It's interesting seeing how Vinay and Telio are developing and deploying autonomous and as well as teleoperated systems working in hand-in-hand that allow these site owners to have some tangible benefit. So to overcome labor shortages or to do a challenging problem or to do an unsafe task, all these undesirable tasks, all these types of things. So it's interesting seeing how this comes together and also thinking about how the difference in the boundary conditions. So, you know, speed, weight, torque, the stability and consistency of the road, these are all significant deviations from on-road autonomy, what you might be picturing in your head when you think about autonomous vehicles. So cool work, really cool to see the progress here and the effort here, and appreciate you listening. As always, more to come next week. Thank you for listening to the Future of Mobility podcast, brought to you by Edison Manufacturing and Engineering. If you have a need for a trusted manufacturing partner for low volumes of highly complex products, then please visit us at edison-mfg.com, or feel free to shoot me a note directly at brandon.bartnick@edison-mfg.com, or visit my LinkedIn page, Brandon Bartnick. Edison specializes in build and assembly of highly complex products and annual volumes of 10 to tens of thousands, utilizing an agile and capital-light approach. If you're making an impact in the mobility space, we'd love to help. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Future of Mobility podcast.